Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
10 years, 10 long years I've been with this guy. Hard to believe. 2016, the Chris Curtis experience began in the life of one Ken Laird. And here we are, 2025, and after a month vacation, here is Curtis back. Great to see you again, my friend.
A month vacation.
That was a better part of the month, Zach, wouldn't you say?
I would say half a month. It was like the time I took off before James was born.
But as I told you yesterday, you came back with a bang. The Greg Hill Morning Show making waves. Well, really, Jelani Tavai making waves.
Do I get credit for both Belichick and Mayo or no?
I don't know if you want to celebrate this. At the beginning of the year, not this calendar year, but the beginning of the football season, you were celebrating Mayo's victory, his impressive victory over the Bengals, and laughing at Bill Belichick that in one game, the new coach had already superseded everything he had done a year ago. Of course, yeah. The quarterback wasn't in yet. But you were a Mayo guy. And here you are at the end of the year. You might have just put the nail in the coffin.
I think yesterday was it.
Oh, it felt like it. I mean,
The walk back. I mean.
The Tavai walk back?
If the Patriots were good at anything this year, it was the walk back.
Yeah.
It's the only thing they've consistently done since the beginning of the year, other than allow the other team's best player to go off every week. And yet, you have Jelani Tavai join the show, and it's a simple question, and I know I asked it in an adversarial fashion, but so what? If every week I hear the same cacophony of crap from these guys about, we love Mayo. Mayo's our guy. He's the best. He knows what he's talking about. We want him back. He gets us. And then they put up that absolute crap sandwich against the Chargers. So I said, you say you want him back, and then you play like dog food. You don't even show up. And he's like, we didn't show up. And I express about the abomination against the Chargers. And Jelani Tavai says, well, against the Bills, which was identical to when I was pressing Belichick and about not allowing a single punt against the Bills, and he created the fake punt out of thin air.
Yeah, you got a wobbly there.
But what happened yesterday was just emblematic of the entire rot internally of that organization. And there's no way. I know I've heard from people that know. I don't dispute their knowledge of the organization that there's no way Mayo's gone. He has to be gone.
He doesn't have to be gone.
No, the things he was supposed to be good at, he's the worst at.
Yeah, but you can just write it off to our roster wasn't good enough.
No, but that's the issue here. He wasn't going to lose the job if it was just a bad team. He has lost the team and the feel and control of that room, which is why he was hired in the first place.
No, but you can also write that off as he tried to do this yesterday. Didn't do a great job, but he said those guys are trying to stick up for me. Like you even heard Tavai when he walked it back. He said, people are taking shots at my family. I don't know if he meant that literally or my football family.
I would cut him today. I would cut Jelani Tavai this morning.
Oh, it wouldn't shock me if he's inactive tomorrow. I mean, I think that would be the best for all parties.
Maybe they can say they're benching him and then start him.
But then people will say they're tanking, which maybe they should.
But has anybody, I know I was off, you know, but has anybody explained why they said they were benching Ramondre Stevenson and then he started? What happened? He told Zoe, right, pregame, right before the game.
Yeah.
So what happened?
I don't know.
Has Zoe said what happened? Did anybody talk to anybody? How does that possibly occur?
Yeah. Well, it's been even Mike Reese had a story about what went wrong with the Patriots. It was kind of highlighting blow by blow some of the miscues this year from the soft, although the soft comment worked out, to the two-point conversion against the Titans and on and some of the miscues of the year. I mean, really, it goes back probably to the spending cash. I think you had him at his first foible,
right,
with burn some cash, but that is at the essence of Mayo's excuse. He thought they were going to burn some cash. They never did. The roster stinks. The tackle they brought in never played for them. They had injuries. Yes, he lost the team at points, but they just stink. I mean, nobody could have won with this roster, and Belichick last year proves it.
What do the most successful people in life have in common? I'll tell you. There's nothing a critic can say to them that they haven't already said to themselves 50 times already that day. The most talented people are their own biggest critic because they are in pursuit of their personal best regardless of what someone on the outside thinks.
Are you talking about May or Tavai here?
No, I'm talking about like Jordan or Bird or, you know, Tiger or Tom Brady or these guys or, you know, Patrick Mahomes. Those people are in pursuit of their perfection. Mm-hmm. There is nothing that can dissuade them off of that. Whereas this organization is consumed with feeling like they are being wronged. They're being oppressed. They're being treated unfairly. Like, Tavai sucked. He's been awful. And I think, you know, Juwan Bentley and all
that. Yeah, overexposed because Bentley went down.
Totally fine. Not his fault entirely. But how about saying, yeah, you know, I wish I played better. Mayo deserves more. Instead of yelling at the guy in, the you know, section 134.
Well, this gets, I mean, it's a little bit different. But sometimes on the morning show, you and Courtney will go back at Twitchers. And our business is a little bit different because you kind of engage with people. We give each other grief. That's kind of the sports talk radio business. But it's a little bit like that. Courtney lashing out at Twitchers who are going at her.
No,
you can understand why people get upset when you're being attacked.
In the context of a radio program, inviting people or inviting dissent or people that disagree is entertainment for the audience as a whole. The people that engage on Twitch and text and call represent less than 2% of the total audience of the radio show. What you're doing in what Jelani Tavai said yesterday.
And by the way, he shouldn't have said it.
But
he made a mistake. He should not have said that.
What Jelani Tavai did is call out fans as a general rule. People that are supportive of the team need to know their place.
Yeah.
When Courtney's getting mad at someone, she's getting mad at a specific person.
Yeah.
Who Game is dog. A character or on the show or whatever.
Sort of.
But either way, it is also, I just find it to be how you're able hours later, and you can't just say, yeah, my bad. And that's it.
He kind of tried.
No, he didn't.
Tavai, he said, I'm sorry. Sorry for anybody who was offended, but.
I mean,
as someone
who screwed up an apology before, I know how to do it. Like, you just get up there, and you bite the bullet, and you move on.
Yeah, well, it all comes to Monday is Black Monday. What is going to happen? Do you think Vrabel is going to get hired here? Because he's interviewing with the Jets. He is the obvious candidate. Oh, forget about Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson's not coming here. The guy is Vrabel. If you're going to make the move, it's Vrabel, who's the defensive mind. He is Hall of Famer in your organization. He brings you back for continuity's sake to the early 2000s, so there's obviously some symmetry there. Was in the crafts box, all that stuff. But he's not the if the problem is the offense.
And the man who won the last playoff game at Gillette Stadium.
Yeah, true. And that might have been his best year with the Titans because they went on to upset the Ravens, right, the week after and lost to the Chiefs in the AFC title game.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a good coach.
Of course.
He's a good coach. He had two bad years at the end in Tennessee.
Is it a McDaniels-Vrabel return?
It could be. I think McDaniels would be, again, maybe he has no choice. I don't know what he's thinking because he probably will never get another head coaching job, right? Is he ready to be another guy's second-hand right-hand man?
If you're Brady, do you try and bring Vrabel to Vegas?
A lot of people are trying to bring Vrabel. Yes. Yes.
I mean, so...
So if you're Kraft, you better swoop in quick. You better make the decision this weekend. Like tomorrow,
well, if
he
you're
literally
Kraft,
might make a decision tomorrow.
Well, if you're Kraft, you say, Mike, here's the deal. Are you signing it? You agree in principle because you don't make that decision unless you know you have your next guy ready.
Yeah, but then that violates all the Rooney rules of interviewing five people and everything else.
Isn't it interesting that this organization where, if you want to say I was wrong about Mayo, dead wrong. I thought week one, I mean, I was totally caught up in the glory.
Well, everybody was caught up in a way by how different he was and how inviting and open he was,
right.
which was refreshing.
The Gatorade bath will go down in infamy. But you have the decision and the way in which the decision makers and the power brokers of this organization have acted since Belichick left has been unseemly, where you had Elliott Wolf arriving at the combine saying we're going to have better vibes, we're going to have people that, you know, no silos, we're all here together, we empower and collaborate, all that. But the real moment of the season that represents the organizational rot, as I alluded to earlier, is the Thursday night week 3 pregame on Amazon. On the footage sucks, it's like in and out. When Robert Kraft told the Amazon broadcast that 5 years ago, he knew Gerard Mayo was this good.
Right, right.
And it's this, like, doubling down on an unknown to make it seem like you're smarter than you really are.
Yeah.
And that is really, you know, I don't know.
Well, that's why I still think, I don't know. I go back and forth. I think it really does depend tomorrow in a way of what happens with the crowd, but that seems like minor stuff. But Kraft, it's hard to believe Kraft would get off that. It's an embarrassing admission for him that he screwed up, right, in his replacement choice of Mayo. That would be a tough admission. It would be a hard thing, and he'd have to pay him.
Right.
He'd have to pay all the coaches that he brought in for multi-year contracts. That's unlike them.
They can do that.
They can.
There was a graphic I used briefly yesterday on the Greg Hill Show from, I think, Savage Boston Sports tweeted it out over the holidays, where the percentage of Pro Bowl draft picks for an organization from the years of like 2014 to 2023, those drafts. So drafted players making the Pro Bowl on the team they were drafted by.
Right.
The Patriots were dead last.
Yeah.
So if you want to, you know, rank why the Patriots are where they are, that's number one. The roster is awful.
Well, that's
the drafting by Belichick was abysmal.
Well, right, and Andy Hart pointed this out yesterday. It's a good point. That's part of the reason their spending is down. They haven't had their own players to re-sign.
Well,
they've re-signed some of them.
That's a crock of crap.
Well,
I'm
not
sorry,
really.
Andy. Why can't you? No, it's actually more expensive to sign other players, so it should be the opposite.
Well, no, but then you go to the free agent market and you say, is Calvin Ridley really worth this amount of money? And they say, well, I'm not sure that he is, and they end up not spending it.
But, Andy, the teams that are poor at drafting are always the ones that had, quote, troubles with the cap. What are you talking about? How are you saying that's a good point?
That's a great point. If you draft Patrick Mahomes, you're going to sign him to a $500 million contract at some point.
Right, but
if you draft Aiden Hutchinson pass rusher, you're going to sign him to a big extension.
The Patriots that drafted Tom Brady, Vince Wilfork, all of these guys, they got big contracts, but they were team-friendly because they were never a free agent. They were signed before they hit term.
They still had a second contract.
But that's what I'm.
But that adds up.
It's the opposite, Ken. If you are bad at drafting, you're up against the cap because you have to spend a lot of money.
That's, well, they haven't been spending money.
Exactly. That's not that's a guy carrying the water of the organization instead of saying that the reason they're not.
Do you think good teams go crazy in free agency every year? Most good teams don't. They sign their own.
No, good teams are good at drafting. What I'm saying is, if you're bad at drafting, you have to do what the Redskins used to do.
You don't have to, and they haven't, and they've chosen not to.
But that's the point, because they haven't tried to be better.
But if they had been good at drafting, they would have spent more money to keep their own.
That's not the right way to look at it. If you are good at drafting, the Patriots in the mid-2000s, in 2014, 2016, 2017, were very near the top of the league in cash spending, and they retained their guys, but they also brought in guys like Revis and guys like that.
Yeah, a couple.
So,
but Revis
was
like the icing on the cake. They would always go out and get one
guy. Okay, Stephon Gilmore.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
they don't win the Super Bowl 2018 Super Bowl without Stephon Gilmore.
No, of course, but like, shouldn't right now Ronnie Perkins be signing for a multi-year, multi-million-dollar contract if they had hit on him from 2021? Instead, he's long gone.
I mean, the reality of where the Patriots find themselves is in a place I don't think I ever saw them going back to. I mean,
it is a dark place,
and
it is a divided place.
Robert Kraft, you know, think just the reason I brought that draft thing up is that. They had that awful roster, and they had one of the best defensive mind, one of the better coaches in the history of American sports in Bill Belichick, and they were still 4-13. You remove the ability to, you know, the Chargers is a great year-to-year thing. Obviously, Harbaugh wasn't there, but Herbert was. Last year, you lose 7-0 to the Chargers at home in a gross weather day. This year, you lose 40-7. And what Belichick was able to do was game plan. I mean, he was able to elevate the bad players he selected. Then they keep the same people, basically, that were on the scouting department in that staff, in Elliott Wolf and in, what's the guy's kid from the Jets' son? Al Groh's kid, Matt Groh.
Yeah, that's not Mayo's fault.
No. So you kept the guys picking intact. And you brought in a coach that had nowhere near the ability of Bill Belichick.
Right.
And the defense has gotten worse.
Well, so that goes back to the 7-1 texture. Kraft is, let's call it, frugal and stubborn, to twist a couple of the words he put up there.
Right.
That leads to they're going to keep Mayo.
You think they're keeping him?
I don't. I really need convinced. I lean toward yes, they're going to keep him. But I think tomorrow they could see
Tomorrow is irrelevant.
Scene. I don't know. I think they could. It could be
last game of Belichick. It's just going to be this like freezing cold. I mean, we'll be there. Are you going?
I will be there, yeah. It's a team bonding event.
Love it. And James is wearing a Josh Allen shirt.
Oh, great. But I want to know from you, the fan, because that's what's important. You make all the difference with this team.
I think it's 0% he's back.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait. 45, I'm like.
And at some point today, I know we're doing off the bat, I have to address, I listened a total of about 20 minutes to this radio station when I was off.
Judas.
Bradford. His dismay at my picture in your office was something to behold.
Yeah.
And the...
He was a little rattled by that.
The when you asked him about the $700 million nonsense...
Yeah.
And he said, and I quote, "The people that were involved in that negotiation don't waste their time." And you let that just sit out there. It may have been the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I don't like the censor people. They'll let you yapper on.
I mean, the reason they were all involved is to make it appear to their fan base that they were in on a guy so they would sell tickets. Why wouldn't they do that?
I might have a little insight to the Bregman thing, too, by the way.
I don't care about Bregman. You have to admit, the Red Sox are liars. I mean, they're just fraudulent pieces of dog food. Look at what they did.
They signed Walker Buehler.
So where's the $700 million?
Well, I got an answer for that.
Okay.
I'll tell you about it. And I have a little Bregman insight, which you might be interested in. You say you're not, but you might
I like
be.
Bregman. I'd love to have him here.
Okay. Do you like Zach Coe? He's ready to trend. It's Zach the Kenny Curtis Show. We're here till noon. I want to know, though, from fans, do you think Mayo's back? Do you want Mayo back? If not, do you want Vrabel? 617-779-7937 on the Kenny Curtis Show. Here's what.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's trending. Oh, what a season. They did beat the Bengals in Week 1. How did that happen? That screwed Cincinnati, too. They are in the playoffs if they win that game, right?
Yeah.
What a disastrous loss for the Bengals. And they almost beat Seattle. Should have beat Seattle. Almost 2-0. Drake May starts Week 6, right? Six. He sat out 5 weeks. Starts Week 6. It's a success. It's a rousing success. And
Mac Jones has more wins this year than Drake May.
What a rock-bottom nadir.
But anybody who doesn't believe in momentum or...
That's Jelani Tavai, by the way, in the locker room.
I don't understand how their brain works. Like, if they beat the Seahawks, everything is just different. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's not like all of a sudden they're a playoff team. But there was a decision in that game that came back to bite them. And there's so many, like, people I was talking over the holidays with family about, is this better or worse? Like, how hard is it to follow or cover this Patriots team as opposed to the, you know, dynastic years? In a way, it was almost easier this year. There was always a major storyline. You know, the games weren't as interesting. The games sucked. Those used to be the best part. But the carcass, the autopsy weekly performed on the organization has been fascinating to me.
Don't you think they can salvage this with the fans? Because I don't think it's universal that people want Mayo out. For instance, here's the texter, 617. You can text the show at our call line, 617-779-7937. Mayo deserves a second year. Comparing him to Vrabel, who took over a playoff-made team that went 9-7 twice before he got there, is a joke. If you bring up coach of the year, that took him 3 years. Vrabel didn't improve a 9-7 team for 2 years. So there are defenders of Mayo, people that feel like he was put in an unwinnable situation and deserves, just based on continuity and a legit shot, a second chance. Can't Kraft, the Krafts, come out Monday, clean house with everybody but Mayo, and sell the fans on that? Van Pelt gone, Covington gone, Elliott Wolf gone. Mayo's going to get free reign to hire who he wants.
Ken.
Maybe bring in McDaniels.
Ken.
Maybe do McDaniels Mayo.
What GM worth anything is going to come in and accept Gerard Mayo as his head coach?
It does. At this point, it doesn't matter.
What do you mean?
You could be the GM compared to Wolf. That will be a win with the fans.
Okay. That is short-term thinking. that is an idiotic thing to do. It really is. Either you keep Mayo and Van Pelt, bring in someone other than Covington. I get that. The Van Pelt firing thing makes no sense to me. The only thing that's gotten somewhat better, and I say somewhat, is the offense.
How can you know that Marcus Jones played offense.
Yeah, you didn't know my name for a year. Like, it's not the end of the world. You have Van Pelt on his offense. If we're just doing what the actual talent he has to coach is, there is one offensive lineman, one out of five, that can do anything. There are zero receivers and one tight end.
I like Cooper.
In a rookie quarterback who is, what, 21, Drake May? Obviously, I don't think Van Pelt is the second coming of Bill Walsh, but to say that he's the fall guy.
Drake's 22.
Okay. So, you know, you just say, we were wrong. My apologize.
So you'd keep Van Pelt?
Well, if under that plan, I would definitely keep Mayo and Van Pelt. Do you know that they would be on their sixth offensive coordinator in 6 years as an organization?
Not great, but I don't think you can look at it that
McDaniels,
way.
McDaniels?
You just look at May.
McDaniels?
Yep.
Patricia Judge, Bill O'Brien, Alex Van Pelt, and then also 5 and 5 years.
Yeah.
Did I forget anybody in there? Well, six, because Patricia and Judge were two, right?
Okay. Yeah. No, but I think you look at it just with Drake May and say if Van Pelt's not the guy, if they're not meshing, if you can do better, you make a change now and you keep that guy. Then he has two in 2 years. But that's not the worst thing.
I don't know how you look at the offense in any way and say, this is how I would coach it up differently. They don't have a line of any kind. I mean,
no, you more look at it as
if you want to look at offense,
Van Pelt's just in over his head.
If you were just drafting an offense, the Patriots offense would be the worst in the NFL, and I would say by a margin of about 10 teams. Like,
yeah, no doubt.
You watch games every week, and you see players catch the ball, and you're, like, stopped in your tracks.
Well, Brendan Schooler's got some offensive ability. We should try that.
And the other thing is I looked into those drafted guys, Pro Bowlers, from those years of 2014.
Yeah.
Brady and Matthew Slater take up about 15 of those picks. You remove those guys, it's basically Dante Hightower, and that's about it.
Jimmy G.
Devin McCourty, Dante Hightower, and Gostkowski.
Jimmy G starting tomorrow, by the way. Very exciting.
Awesome.
Rams putting it back
Who
in.
Who are you more wrong about, Brady, Bill, or Jimmy G?
How wrong were you and Mayo, though? We have a little snippet. Can we play this, Zach? A little Curtis snippet from after week one. I just think this is good perspective. I'm not trying to pile on. But here was Curtis's reaction after the Bengals win. A little bit of it.
I have to say, it was the first time I have truly rooted for the Patriots in about 4 years. And it felt so phenomenal. It was old school. It was a team that responded to a coach. It was a cohesive unit without little stupid fights up and down the team. The owner wasn't mad at the coach. The coach wasn't mad at the owner. The coach talked to the quarterback. The team talked to the coach. Everybody was going in one direction, and it was old school Patriots win.
You weren't alone, by the way. There were a lot of people that felt fired up after that win. But it's, and now it's, God, people fighting. You and Mayo fight during the interview. He's got to walk it back with you. You're threatening to walk it back. Tavai's unraveling. What happened?
I would say very simply, that is how I reacted to the game. It looked amazing. I was shocked. Wasn't that as shocking an outcome as you've seen in a long time?
Yes, but there was sort of a sentiment that maybe the Bengals just were bengaled more so than the Patriots were.
The biggest thing about watching that game, Ken, was it looked repeatable. Remember the Jonathan Jones stick on fourth down coming up from the secondary?
Yeah, okay.
Like, it wasn't that they did some, like, oop-de-oop right or, like, a flea flicker. It looked like a very coherent offense, safe, no turnovers. I mean, the biggest play of that game was the muff punt by the Bengals that gave the Patriots the opportunity there. But
right. In
hindsight, all that stuff looks good now that you know the team stinks. But in real time, I didn't.
But you don't really think they can bring Mayo and Van Pelt back, right? I don't think that is going to set well.
They're not going to.
Running it back.
Yeah, they're not going to.
So you think they're cleaning house?
Yes.
Everybody gone.
See you later.
Elliot Wolf?
Adios. They have to. What has Elliot Wolf done?
I would give Robert Kraft a lot of credit for that. That would really take a lot of cash.
Right.
He would be burning some cash, finally. And that would take some intestinal fortitude to do a 180 in a year after a guy you really went to bat for.
Yeah.
In a major way.
Well, I mean, this is about as bad as it gets.
Let's go to the coach in New Hampshire to kick us off this morning on Kenny Curtis. Morning, coach.
Hey, morning, guys. Great show as always. I have three quick points. One, I'm glad you mentioned Jimmy G because I think Jimmy G and I are twins Actually, that's not true. Number two, yesterday on the show, you know, when Tavai was saying that crazy stuff, we started to talk about how the players, you know, maybe are getting a mixed message from Mayo. Here's what I'm saying. Mayo says, you're soft. Oops, sorry. No, I meant to say, you know, you're not soft. Mayo says, you're mentally, this team is mentally weak. Oops, nope. You're actually strong. The point I'm trying to make is, like when Parcells or even Belichick would say, you stink right now and get it together or you're out of here, he didn't walk it back. And I'm a coach, and if I have to say something strong as a leader and stick with it and have conviction. Gerard Mayo has no conviction. He walks everything back, and I really think the players aren't looking at him like a consistent, convicted coach. The last thing I want to say really quick is the fan thing. I agree, you pay your money, you get to kind of say what you want to say, except for one point I want to make. Last year, when Jaren Duran was having an amazing year, and the hardest thing to do in my mind in sports is to hit a 98-mile-an-hour fastball that's moving, and you got some bozo in the stands telling him, swing an effing tennis racket. I personally would have, I wouldn't have used the word he used, but I might have gone into the stands and take the bat and shoved it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Coach. Obviously, that is unacceptable homophobic slur that was used by Duran. I mean, that's a bad comparison. Yeah, but even you go back before that, Duran was had bad fan interactions the year before. He was a mess. He got it together.
But, like, if we're in an event and somebody is screaming at me and I turn around and use horrible language and shove him to the ground. Not like I would ever be able to shove anyone to the ground. It's on the company doesn't give a damn about what he was saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's how are you representing yourself in a public spot for the company and the show you're on? So it's like Jelani Tavai hours later, it's as if they haven't even been told they're bad. It's like they're hearing it for the first time from me or a fan.
Well, don't you think there's a chance that someday it goes the way of European soccer where the players are not available to speak? It's amazing it's lasted this long. The gap of money and reality from athletes to fans is so wide. They just don't get each other anymore. So you get these young guys who come into the league, and Tavai's not even that young, but they're not ready for that kind of criticism and don't feel like they have to put up with it, not from their coaches, not from the fans. And so they're just going to shield the entire locker room and not make them available to speak.
But
what's the win for the organization to make players even available to talk?
Well, because by and large, you think about Cam Newton, a guy that wasn't great, but I think did himself a massive service when he came on every week because he was an obviously likable character who took it seriously, who was accountable. I mean, I think back to all my favorite players in my lifetime growing up here. I mean, you think about guys like Trot Nixon, who was a dirt dog, and those guys. You think about Troy Brown.
Yeah.
You think about guys that are just accountable, who stand in front of their locker, good, bad, or indifferent.
But that's an old generation. That's the Wiggy generation. That's why Wiggy was so shocked about like what Tavai said. He's like, I can't believe this. Why can't you just say I suck?
But
it's not in the modern athlete.
I think Drake May's accountable. Like
There are a few.
I mean, I even hear Lamar Jackson after a bad game. He said, my mom even said I shouldn't have done. Like, I mean, there's guys that are great players.
Even
I think
Mahomes Tatum, is Tatum last night, I don't know if you caught his post game. It wasn't like accountability, but he had something about I play every road game because there's somebody in the crowd with my jersey. Kids got Christmas tickets.
Oh, they're rattled with the ratings in the NBA. Yikes.
Yeah, but that's still good on Tatum.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
At least there's a guy who got it, even
exactly.
If he doesn't mean it. He does play a lot.
Tatum is someone who has been open about wanting the individual accolades, being honest about what the cover of the NBA 2K meant to him as a kid, playing it, talked about the MVP, but also who, you know, won a championship, and it's the best way to shut everybody up, which is, I did it. You can't say anything anymore. For Jelani Tavai to have this approach, I wouldn't say he's a leader, but I wouldn't say he's a nobody in that locker room.
No, I think that... I think everything he said yesterday was...
Look at it up and down the roster. Look at Christian Barmore, who gets pulled over in the middle of the night, leaving Providence, going home, and he's got something in his car. No accountability, attacks the cop. Do you know who I am? Not attack physically, but verbally.
Apologize later, right?
Right. Apologize later on social media, never answers a question about it. I mean, to be honest, has Robert Kraft taken accountability for what happened to Brady and Bill? Has he stood in front of anybody and answered direct questioning?
I mean, he stood in front of the Apple TV documentary cameras,
right,
and got his
message. It's downhill. And I think what you watch where they are, and there were many things that Tom and Bill were different about, and those have written books and books and docuseries on docuseries about that relationship. But one thing they had in common was that they were obsessed with what they did wrong and correcting it. That's the only way you find greatness.
Let's go to Ron in New York, I believe. Hi, Ron.
Hey, guys. Good morning, and thanks for taking the call. Just a couple of quick points. First, I wanted to compliment Curtis on his interview and his questioning with Tavai, because I love the questions. Most media members shy away from asking the questions that everybody at home is dying to be asked, and I give you credit for doing that. Secondly, I can't wrap my head around what's happened with the Patriots this last year. I mean, when you have a fledgling business, and if anything, Kraft's a good businessman, when do you ever, in what walk of life, do you go out and pick the least experienced possible person to lead and then fill in all the empty spots with cast-offs and you know, unwanted misfit pieces? I mean, it was a disaster before it happened. And given that, how do you double down and bring these guys back? Who's going to come and play? Who's going to sign a long-term deal knowing that after year one there was question whether or not this guy would be back? So knowing the whole front office coaching staff's going to be blowing up in year two or year three, because let's be honest, this isn't getting turned around overnight. One draft, one free agency period isn't turning this around. You know, so I don't know. I think Kraft can win a lot of fans over by admitting he was wrong and making the right choice. It is going to cost money, but just stand behind your franchise and you show that you too, not just Bill Belichick, not just Tom Brady, but you too can make appropriate decisions to have a winning franchise and lead the franchise out of this murkiness that we've been funked in here for, you know, the last 3 or 4 years. But thanks, guys, for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the kind words.
Now, the interesting thing, Ron mentions the free agency spending, and it's not going to take – it'll take more than a year. Do you think actually they would consider keeping the coaching staff and blowing it up in a year, wait for the this year's draft selection to start to groom and not go out in free agency for another year? Because really, I mean, the caller's kind of right. I mean, you could go crazy in free agency. You're not going to be a playoff. You're probably not going to be a playoff team next year, probably.
But that's
I mean, Houston has done it.
It's not true. The last time the Patriots were a playoff team, they spent $250 million in free agency in the offseason prior. And they went from 7-9 to 10-7. And they also kind of crapped the bed at the end of that season. I mean, you had that Saturday night brutal loss to the Jonathan Taylor-led Frank Reich Colts. You had the pick six thrown by Mac Jones against the Dolphins in the season finale. Then you got your doors blown by the Bills in that wild card weekend. But, I mean, if this team had Calvin Ridley, if this team signed two other offensive linemen, they absolutely have a couple more wins,
okay,
without a doubt.
So let's say they signed T. Higgins and or Chris Godwin.
Godwin, I guess. I mean, Godwin's kind of cooked at this point. But yeah,
and they signed Khalil Mack as a pass rusher.
Love Khalil Mack.
And they signed Ronnie Stanley of the Ravens.
What about John Gruden?
Tackle. Oh, John Gruden. I've heard his name thrown out a lot. I don't know. It's a bit... He's experienced, that's for sure. To the caller's point, you go from least experienced to very experienced, but almost possibly washed and a sideshow. I don't know.
I mean, the decision, I mean, Vrabel is a brilliant guy, and I've asked Wiggy several times about this because he was on that 0-1 team and Vrabel was a teammate of his.
Yeah.
And he said that, you know, Mike, he speaks glowingly of who he is as a guy, how respected he was in the locker room. I don't know. I mean, he would be perfect. He's, what, 45, 50 years old? This could be a 10, 15-year run.
Yeah.
I mean, what a...
Well, The Athletic did a long piece on Vrabel yesterday or today. There are a couple snippets in there I'll read to you on the other side, which kind of reveal why he got fired at Tennessee and what kind of coach he was there and whether that's a good fit with this organization. We'll talk about Vrabel next.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radnor, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so Mike Vrabel. Do you want Vrabel? Top texter on the line, 617. Why in the actual F do people want Vrabel? Well, he's a good coach, right? I mean, he's a six-year veteran coach now. So the fact that you have multiple years and a couple of playoff years, I think he's 2-3 in his postseason record, he's got some ability as a coach. I think just as a baseline, compared to Mayo, who had no experience. So he's an experienced coach. But why did he get fired? So there's a big story in The Athletic, Curtis, about the end of Vrabel's tenure. Titans went 9-7 in his first year, missed the playoffs. Next year, 9-7, but made a postseason run, went to the AFC title game, beat the Patriots, as you pointed out, the last Patriots playoff, last win at the playoff win at Gillette. Then they went 11-5 and 12-5. Then things changed. John Robinson was their GM. They traded A.J. Brown to Philadelphia, didn't replace him adequately, had some injuries. They lost seven straight games. They fired Robinson, the GM. Vrabel wanted a different GM than the one they went with. The Titans owner hired Rand Carthon from the 49ers, and they fired his guy, Ryan Cowden, after the 2023 draft. And so after that, it appears that collaborative word, Vrabel wasn't collaborative enough. Last year when Vrabel, Curtis, had all these interviews, Vrabel noticed a consistent line of questioning that suggested he did not collaborate with ownership and the front office. So first question to you is that a good thing? Is Vrabel collaborative enough for the Crafts if he comes back here? Because that's the knock, that he wanted to be the boss or at least have a GM who he was in sync with and didn't listen to ownership. Maybe that'd be different here with the Crafts. And
I don't know of an example of a championship organization where the head coach and the GM, if not being the same person, aren't entirely headed in the same direction. Do you know of any?
I think we've had some Red Sox interesting relationships
about the
over
Patriots,
the years.
So. Like NFL.
Yeah, NFL. It's important to be in lockstep.
Well, even the Red Sox, I think Dombrowski and Cora were fine.
I mean, Cora loved Dombrowski.
I think 13 was what, Farrell and was it Sherrington?
But isn't always the rub. The GM works for the owner. The owner puts restrictions on him. The manager, the coach, always wants the GM to spend more. So there's a fight there. There's a natural fight going on all the time there.
But I think in the NFL, at least, the NFL has become much more like Major League Baseball, where the cap is there just for purposes of fun conversations. It's not really something that prohibits a team from spending money.
Nothing more fun than a cap conversation.
Where do you stand? But just think about, yeah, Andy Reid and, is it Veach? I always say the guy's name in Kansas City, which is amazing. They're like dynastic right now, and you don't even know the name of the GM. But
Brett Veach.
So they are obviously simpatico. Mm-hmm. You have the Les Snead and McVay, similar. They're on the same page laughing at you for taking Cole Strange. You have the, let's look at the Ravens. It was Ozzie Newsome forever, and now there's another guy that's with Harbaugh that gets along well. Mike Tomlin and whoever with the Steelers. I mean, all the successful organizations.
John Lynch, 49ers.
Right. That could be an interesting one. Shanahan and Lynch have been in a little bit of a power struggle. But
Howie Roseman, Eagles.
Right. But in the Eagles, it's Howie Roseman's brilliant, and Sirianni is expendable. But
Ravens is Eric DaCosta now.
Right. So you have all these organizations. You need that. You need what Robert Kraft has to do is bite the bullet, spend on Vrabel, sit back, find the GM, whoever it is, and say.
So you like Vrabel, even though he's a defensive guy, because that's the biggest knock. You need an offensive guy. You're fine with it.
Absolutely. Because he is a culture guy. He is what we thought Mayo was. Mm-hmm. Mayo is not a culture guy.
Now, he's also an accountability guy. So part of this Athletic piece talks about his Belichick tendencies as a coach. Here's what they write. Vrabel was unafraid to call out stars like A.J. Brown or Jeffrey Simmons or Derrick Henry in front of the entire team. There was candor, brutal at times. Not everyone appreciated it. Vrabel admits at times he focused too much on the things players were doing wrong instead of highlighting the things they were doing right. Most of the locker room understood where he was coming from. It's Belichick, too.
Well, there is a great episode of one of the many docuseries on the Patriots, The Man in the Arena, which was an ESPN production with Religion of Sports, which was the we had him on the old show, but his father's this brilliant guy, and he's a son. I can't remember.
I know who you mean, but
either way, they had a episode with Vrabel and Rodney Harrison, I believe. They did 10 of these for all the 10 Super Bowl seasons of Brady's career. And this was, I think, the one where they beat the Panthers for their second championship. And in it, they talk about the edgers. And Vrabel and Harrison were edgers, where every day at practice, Rodney Harrison came in, blew up Troy Brown over the middle of the field. Tom Brady's losing his mind. Where it was their job every day to get in the head of Tom Brady and Tom Brady's job to get into their head. And how they were just, they sought the edge constantly. And how they were able to elevate each other. And I reckon
Gotham Chopra.
That's it. Thank you. And so what happened is obviously that culture has changed. You know, the next generation is always different. But the way in which Mike Vrabel carries himself and the credibility he has in a room. I mean, has anybody been more, Swiss Army knife than a guy like Mike Vrabel, who was released by the Steelers, joins the Patriots, beats them twice in this AFC Championship game, wins Super Bowls with sacks, wins them with interceptions. I mean, it was the hands team. The guy was a tight end. I think he has as many Super Bowl touchdown catches as Randy Moss.
Yeah, back-to-back years.
He represents someone that gets it. And
that's what we thought Mayo would bring too, though, in a way, his
right.
credibility as a player.
But I would say that
champion.
Dante Hightower is the more of a modern day Vrabel than Jerod Mayo. And Hightower's on the staff. But I mean, I think of a guy that just was at their best. Like, you never questioned whether Hightower was in the right spot. You never questioned about Mike Vrabel. And I don't know. Maybe it's just a fanboy thing where I remember those days and I long for them. So.
No, but I think fans would get sucked in. I think he's the obvious favorite choice. A couple other nuggets on this. Vrabel would get to the facility early in the morning and work out, and for hours camp outside the training room. If a player didn't show up for treatment on time, he would call them. There were teach tape meetings. A look at how penalties were called and mistakes were made on Friday. Officiating crew deep dives on Saturday. He would want players physically and mentally exhausted by the end of the week. Former Titan center Ben Jones said, "I would be absolutely brain dead by Sunday." So he's a hardo. He is a hardo in the Belichick mold. That would be the Vrabel if he comes in.
Right, but that's the direct. That's where you have to overcorrect.
That could be good. That could be good. Yeah, maybe.
In my view. I mean, it's
1 year. 1 year left and back to the right.
Do you think Mayo's ever a coach again in the NFL?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, I don't.
I think he'll get another shot.
I think he'll do something else.
He was just too soon for him. And I'm not even convinced he's gone Monday, but you let us know. 617-779-7937. It is the Ken and Curtis Show. Is Mayo back, and do you want him back?
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday you'll hear us and see us chatting with big name celebrities.
And every Monday you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.